Welcome back. It's the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. We are cleaning up American discourse, one unethical persuader at a time. And you're out there. I know you're out there. I've heard you talk, you people. I'm Dr. Dan French, American rhetorician, late night comedy writer. And, you know, this is one of the things I do. Super fun. Podcast interviews with friends of mine and interesting people. This week, my guest is a man. Like he's a man. Like you're going to get manness from this guy in a good way. He also unbends the bent. He uncricks the cricked. Gives you an unbreakable body, which I like that, man. That's a good brand. It's a big claim.
It's a massive claim, actually. I remember like having this brainstorm session of like, what do I want to name this thing? And I was like, oh, like unbreakable, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
And I had to work backwards. So I started with the name, and then I had to like legitimately find the science that like I can claim this is true. Oh my God. And like, when I realized that, like my brain exploded and nice. I was like, this is real. It's the real deal.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that today. Alternative Cairo guy, stoic dad. He put the beer in beard. He's also a great neighbor. Let my kids work out in his garage gym during the shamdemic.
So yeah, man.
Gotta love this guy. Dave Cahodes, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. It's like the Dr. Dan and Dr. Dave show. This is
no hair above the ears.
No hair allowed.
Oh, you more than compensate.
I love it. Yeah, I can grow a beard. It's like, you know, one of the few things I do very well is I can grow a beard.
Zeke is appalled by the fact that he can't grow like anything. Like,
he's gonna be a baby face for forever,
and, probably so know,
yes yeah. And you know, for those who don't know, it's your son, and so
yeah, it's my 18 year old son, who's, you know, he's a bit of a beast. He's not a beta guy, but they just can't push the hair,
right? Yeah, no, he's a strong kid.
Yeah, he's doing well. So yeah, here we go, man. Like, we met at PaleoCon, right? Or whatever it was called.
Yeah, it was PrimalCon, PaleoFX. They're all out there. You and I were into the paleo scene for a while there.
Yeah, there's lots of scenes to come in and out of.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I was back then, I was speaking on mobility, on healing, which is kind of what I still do, is how to heal thine self using what's around you. And that's kind of the idea of, you know, being primal, breaking it down into this most fundamental practices, and then going from there. So anyway, I was
primal. You have no choice but to use what's around you. Nothing is built for you.
Like, you know, use rocks, you know, to heal yourself. That's sort of what I was kind of doing. It was like lacrosse balls and moving tissue and speaking on that. I'm very interested in, like, you know, how do we as individuals have our greatest potential within us? You know, I'm much more of a individualist, right? I'm not one of these great reset guys, you know. I'm quite the opposite of that. I really think we as individuals have the capacity within us to have whatever we want. And so that's what I was speaking on.
Sounds like we're getting a little tick. There's like a little click in your audio. I don't know what that is.
Let me try something really quick.
Okay.
I'm going to unplug.
All right.
Is that better?
Everybody always says, they're always like, is that better before they talk? Enough for you to ascertain.
Is this better? I'm just going to use the computer audio from the, you know, I was using one of those external.
That's much worse, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. Now you're out of sync and now you're getting lots of little pips. I don't know what it is.
All right. Hang on one sec.
That's the other thing about, you know, guerrilla production at this level with Zooms and things like that. There's no technician. If something goes weird, it's just, you know, deal. Can you hear me?
One sec, I lost you.
Okay. I'm going to hit pause for a second. All right, we are back. We are tech.
All right, well, you'll have to splice these together.
They'll splice. Like, as soon as I pause, it just pauses. So I try to do no editing, no sweetening, nothing. You know, if people like the content, great. If they don't,
solid.
Go watch CSI.
I love it. That's good. I hope they like the content. I hope this is going to be to their standards. This is valuable content right now.
That's right. So, okay. So you're a Alterna guy, Cairo guy, Unbreakable Body. I know what you were on. You were starting to go on to individualism. How you believe in and value the individual.
Yeah.
Versus communalism. Is that?
Yeah, for sure. Then that's actually, as opposed to communism.
Communalism, I suppose
it's like.
Like communalism and community doesn't mean communism.
Right.
Like tribalism is the original group.
That's true, actually. That is correct, actually. If we want to break it down, if we are going to be a rhetorician, I am not a rhetorician by trade, and you are. So we can actually break down these terms. I think you talk about politics a lot in your other podcast, or if it's this podcast, I'm not sure. But I'm really fascinated by just when you're at a different level of like organization, whether it be like world, okay, or like, you know, United States, the state of Texas, which we live in, you know, the city of Austin, you get smaller and smaller. And it's like, you get to my neighborhood and then you get to like, you know, my community of people that I like connect with. And then you get to like my family. It's like, I have different levels of like interaction with that. And when it comes to my family, like, yeah, I'm a communist, of course, like I'm going to bring home money and I'm going to share it with you, you know? And so
everybody
like,
shares everything. There's no hierarchy, really.
Absolutely. There's really no hierarchy. Right. So like, you know, when it comes to that level, and I think wherever the level is of interaction with individuals, I think there should be just different levels of governing. I'm not going to use the word government because so not to confuse the end user here, but governing and interaction. So, you know, for me personally, I am an individualist. I think we as humans need to do our job to be our best selves so that at each level we can add back to that organization, that level of governing. So you
would be a proponent of both, like strong individuals, once they get into collectives, become a strong collective.
Agreed. That's if you wanted take my philosophy and put it into a sentence, that would be it. I think we as humans, it's like our job to be our best selves, which is why, you know, I created the Unbreakable Self as an idea, because I think once we as individuals have the power to just take the power back. And what that means is like having free thought to make the best decisions for ourselves. Then what happens is you start to then add back to the community rather than look to the community or the governing body of said community to give you something, whether that be like, as an example, like the medical system, you know, instead of like looking to your doctor and like the pharmaceutical companies to come up with a vaccine so that you are going to be healthy and safe, like as an individual, you can make decisions because we know with the pandemic that is as it is today in 2020, we know those who have low vitamin D, low zinc, and metabolic disorder are at the highest risk. So it's like, okay, as an individual, what's my job? Get vitamin D the best way I can. Okay, get in the sun, you know, take vitamin D supplements if I need, you know, have zinc in my diet and be metabolically sound, which means, okay, like maybe eat a little bit less, don't eat so much sugar, you know, get out and move my body. These are things that are going to do the best for me. And then as a collective, then we become a much stronger collective And it's not so much that I'm, you know, it's kind of funny because it becomes sort of like, it looks as if it's like unempathetic in a way where it's like, oh, well, you're just a natural selection. Like you just think of natural selection and every man for themselves kind of thing. Well, it's not necessarily that. I think we as individuals have a job to do for ourselves so that we can actually make the collective even stronger. So
yeah, when I was a young, that a little bit, cause I, you know, this is it's a strong area of theory and belief in American culture, you know, always has been that the individual has some primacy and some power and some value and some responsibility, you know? And I think that's very familiar to Americans. It's part of the way, you know, our culture came along. It's part of what we're taught as we go up, you know, through different levels in the culture. It becomes weird when it goes to a collective level and you start trying to impose that back on people that, you know, either aren't in from individualistic cultures, they're from communal cultures,
right?
Or they've made a move over to, you know, it's probably, you know, on the collectivist side, the idea that collective action is the reality and individualism is like a myth that
right.
White guys get to hold on to because they're right. So empowered by nature, they're physically stronger, you know, and if you've come through a somewhat decent culture where you've been fed, then your body is strong. So
right.
It's a myth. This myth of individualism is one way of going at that.
Right.
I think some people from more collectivist backgrounds use, and I'm not advocating one or the other, but I look at it and I'm like, I see a lot of guys who are talented, smart, hardworking, and they want individualism.
Yeah. Right. Right. Because it's like, oh, well,
hey, this works for me. I'm doing good.
It works for me. Right. And I, you know, And to be fair, like I can absolutely see, you know, both sides here. It's like if you're downtrodden and dispossessed and you just don't know a way out and you're depressed and you're, you know, like both mentally and financially depressed, you're like, dude, I just need, give me a hand here. Like somebody help me out. And, you know, I've been there, you know, in my own mind, in my own psyche where I've been, you know, downtrodden in myself thinking that I was like doing the right things as a man and like living this life, you know, I'm, you
is
know,
that what
like,
men do when they're doing,
that's what men do, you know, like, you know, like, I'm, you know,
what is that? Like is that the marching? Is that climbing
international
two ropes?
Sign for get out of my way. I'm an individual.
Cross country skiing. What are you doing at that moment?
I don't know. It's like the Bash Brothers from the 80s, you know, WWE, you know, like, you know, like very gruff, very grummel. And, you know, I fell into that as a man. If we're going to be talking about like man and masculine, we can go to masculinity. That's a whole other conversation.
Well, you were in the army and you've done, you know, body work for a living and you work out. So clearly that's part of your identity.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm a very physically cultured individual. There's no doubt about it. I have a warrior background just through and through. I was even in high school and even before high school, I wanted to play football. Then I got into wrestling. It's like, I wanted to manipulate the world with my physicality. I was like, sure. Yes, I can, I am strong. I can do this. And, you know, which in a way that lended itself to my personal philosophies. And it does make a lot of sense, you know, kind of going back in my history. And it's actually very interesting because that gift of being physically cultured also brought me into a great deal of suffering when I hit this moment of, well, I can't do everything myself. What? I can't do everything myself? Huh? This is weird. Like I can't get the results I want by working harder, by hustling, you know? And so I was like, oh man. So like I hit the wall, it was like 2015. And then I just rebuilt myself and that's, you know, who I've become today. And that's actually what we're teaching with the Unbreakable Self of what this new men's development company that I'm building is going to be all about, which is all about, you know, how to take on the, you know, find your center and actually create power within yourself to sort of rise above the rhetoric, right? We're going to use the word rhetoric, rise above that and like look around and be like, Democrats are crazy and Republicans are crazy and like that guy over there is crazy and this guy over there is going to say that is saying that there's going to be some, you know, some governing body that's going to take over all the possessions of the world and then they're going to make you happy. I don't know. You know, it's like, you just rise above it. And that's, again, that's why I'm an individualist, because I think it's all kind of silly.
Well, and it is kind of silly in the way that it gets played out in the big culture. You know, once ideas break into pop culture or they break into sort of, you know, mass media public discourse, they all become silly.
Yeah.
You know, it's yeah. very hard to hold on to the intellectual roots of something, you know, like
yeah.
Marxism and communism and socialism and all those things that Americans throw around. The fact that Americans use the name Marx and they say Marxism just astounds me, or communism, because they don't understand anything about any of it. They've never read a
right.
single book.
Right.
They've never lived in any kind of a communal kind of environment to judge it.
Yes.
But it's because it comes to us through the media and it's not real and we can make quick judgments about it, but it warps everything that's coming to you intellectually.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then we're supposed to use that to make decisions, which is a crazy system.
And if you think about like the system of the media, right, it's like, if we're just going to use that as a system of like from which we gain access to information, they are there to stimulate your mind, to get you to remain a viewer, a consumer of their product, meaning the quote unquote news, whatever is true or false, I don't care, but they're there to get you there to then sell advertising because we have this much viewership. And then that advertising then kind of perpetuates that of like, you're sick. Yeah. And so you're going
to
be
they're there to make you
this.
Experience emotions for
right.
sure.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah. And so it's the, that, you know, if we're going to talk about manipulation, perfect example of manipulation.
Well, it's like manipulation is sort of, and this is why I break rhetoric in the Rhetoric Warriors model into ethical and unethical persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
Like just being emotional or, you know, tagging into people's emotions and their psyche and things like that isn't necessarily unethical. You know, yeah. like when you're communicating with somebody, it's highly, you know, emotional work, like with your kids, you yeah. have to, you model the right emotions that you want them to be able to feel comfortable with constantly. And you,
yeah.
you keep the ones out that you may be feeling internal, like some horrible anger or frustration, but you don't yeah. express that to the kids.
Right.
So emotion work is always part of our messaging. It becomes manipulation when it's, you know, inauthentic, you know, when it's done just as a technique, like you said, just to get people where they can't turn it off. They can't turn your station off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I 100% agree with that. And I was actually like singing a song from, I don't know where this came from in my head, from an advertisement from like the 90s. It was like a hair, like a shampoo, like, you know, which is funny because I don't have any hair. But it, and I was singing it and Jenny was like, is that Vidal Sassoon, you know, song from the 90s? And I'm like, yeah, like, it's crazy how like that stuff is still in your head. And I'm like, man, that's hilarious. Like, you know, just, you know, that's where
that's
it's
what
like,
I love about the media. And again, people don't really understand how to decode the media and break down the process and the product of how it does that to you. But it's, they've upped the game so high now on, you know, cable news with sound effects and stings and colors and constant shift and hyper emotion and all this stuff. It's really hard to turn it off.
Yeah.
And that explains, you know, a lot of the fact of what's happened to the right, that they've yeah. been emotionally heightened and heightened and heightened. And the conspiracies have gotten more and more intricate, you know, and farther yep. and farther out there, but you can't yep. turn it off. Once your brain is into that reality and experiencing that stimulation, it's really hard
yeah.
to turn it off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's going to be like a popping, you know, where it's like, people are just going to go nuts.
To be evidence of that.
I was going to say people are going literally like a man dressed like a buffalo storming the Capitol building.
Well, that's one of the things that interested me, you know, when we've talked about this over the years, for those who don't know, Dave and I were neighbors right across the street for years. And
yeah.
we had originally met, you know, at Paleo Primal Con. And when I was doing a stand-up show about, you know, using paleo to lose weight. And then we just randomly ended up living right across the street from each other in Austin.
It was fortuitous.
And we would just see each other, you know, coming home from work or whatever every once in a while, and just end up standing out in the street for 30 minutes and talking about whatever, you know? And so we've had a lot of these conversations about, and what interested me was I watched you move through stoicism. You know, I think a lot of people who value individualism go back to Marcus Aurelius and, you know, the Stoics, and they found some really good, solid theory back there. Some things that people
thought for a long time
about individuals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you cycle through that. And it seems like, you know, I see people do that, and they'll go through it. And there's a certain point with almost every theory set where you start to get bored with the theory. It becomes a bit repetitious, and you're like, okay, maybe I'll move to a little more this or that. But I was fascinated because I think Stoicism is a really interesting philosophy for Americans. Because it's a lot about responsibility. It's not just about the individual who wants the power to impress themselves upon the world.
Yes.
It's also about, if you've got the power, you now have a responsibility to take care of the world.
Yes.
You're giving back to the world by making yourself good, but you're not just living in a castle and saying, I'm good, forget the rest of you.
Right, right. With Stoicism and I really enjoyed the philosophy, and I still do. And you know, how I got to that was, you know, there was suffering in my life, and I was the cause of that suffering based on my own mindset and my own desires of the world. And then I kind of went through Buddhism, but Buddhism was like as a philosophy, not necessarily a religion. I wasn't really like practicing every week or, you know, doing that. It was just like looking at the fundamental principles of like, well, they seem pretty happy. I'll try that. And and then what I found was like sort of like anything else, it was like, this is, you know, like I'm not gonna sit on a mountaintop and like just like live in an ashram.
It's a boring religion.
It's boring, you know. It's like, I think it's great, it's like a great philosophy for some, but like how do we take like Eastern philosophy and then like, you know, it with Western modernity and meld the two, because life moves fast. It just does, you know, especially in modern times. And so then I found Stoicism, and what's interesting about Stoicism, I really liked it because like you hit the nail on the head when it comes down to the individual, it comes down to the individual and the personal responsibility of the individual to witness and accept their own sufferings. And the sort of the rhetoric, both with Buddhism and Stoicism, like the principles are very similar in a way. Mm-hmm. And the fundamental principle that it always comes down to is that all of life is suffering. And even like some modern teachers that I follow, I liked Jordan Peterson's stuff. He talks a lot about that when he was breaking down certain philosophies and, you know, kind of came to the point of all of life is suffering. And what I was really looking for was a sense of ease, a sense of satisfaction, or a sense of peace, you know, through these philosophies. And because there's always this an inherent tension inside of the human psyche, right? It's like we always like want, but we don't want to feel the anxiety of not having. And so we like try to play this balance. And so I went through Stoicism, and I recently sort of dropped the moniker or the claim that I am, a follower of Stoicism, because I realized that you become Stoic once you have peace. You don't find peace when through Stoicism. And I heard that actually through Naval Ravikant on the, I think Tim Ferriss podcast, and that hit me, and I was like, that makes a lot of sense. It's sort of like as another example in Western, you know, Judeo-Christian philosophy, if we're going to just take the Ten Commandments as a thing, like you can't become a good person by following the Ten Commandments. When you're a good person, the Ten Commandments just are. They just are what you.
Isn't that a weird collection of commandments?
Yeah, right.
Like there's literally do not murder, and then, you know, be nice to your mom and dad.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Exactly. It's like, you know, be good to your mother and father. Hey, you know, don't covet your neighbor. You know,
who doesn't covet their neighbor's wife? That is a ridiculous dictate. I've coveted thousands of neighbors' wives. Like, you can't tell me. What does covet mean? Does it mean like, you know, calling her up at midnight, or does it mean like, ah, she's hot?
I think it's the idea. I think it's the idea of like, don't look upon that which you don't have and seek it. That's sort of, again, it's like a stoic.
That is consumption culture. You know, you mentioned a minute ago about modernity versus these kind of oldest, you know, theories and religions. Like modernity wants none of that.
Correct. Yeah.
They'll spin it around, but it's like, I need people to want all the time. That's all consumption is.
Absolutely. And that's sort of what has lended itself, I think. And it, you know, I could be completely wrong here, but you know, it like 800 years ago, that's like when like modern civilization started, you know, like the 1200s, where it's like communities started, you know, creating, and was like, all right, you specialize in this, so you do that. And then you specialize in this and you do that. And then there was like the guy that could kind of just be the middleman. And then like they kind of created like pockets and communities. And then it created like a modern society. And then that modern society then created norms. We'll call it just social norms of how to live, how to be, how to locomote, right? You move through the world. And it sort of lended, like, you know, like fast forward to today, because we have lost sight of our own personal power, and we like lost sight of, we as Western, I'm going to use the word Westerner, like from Western culture, because the Eastern culture, I don't live in the Eastern culture, and I think it might be a little bit different. But I think in Western culture, as men and individuals, we lost the guidance from our elders. And this is where I do enjoy tribalism in a sense, because tribalism actually cares. Where we lost elders to guide us through the process of maturation. And so we then now in modern society, sort of like we maturate our children to the age of 18 and just say, all right, see you later.
It's crazy to me. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I remember like the pandemic was interesting because Zeke graduated high school 2 weeks before the pandemic hit. So he did an accelerated program, you know, got done with his classes. And he's like, I'm out. All my friends still have to go to class. 2 weeks later, you know, everybody's out. So it irritated him. But he was with me. Him and Quincy moved back with me for, you know, 10 months. And she came back from college and did her college here at home. And so he had a space in there about 9 months of me teaching him, you know, how to cook and go to the grocery and all that. His sister doing that stuff with him. And so he almost had like a, you know, into modernity culture again. It's a consumption culture training, but the kid can cook now. He understands food. He understands some stuff about budgeting. And when he moved out, I'm like, dude, you're pretty cooked. I mean,
yeah,
you know, what else do you,
you got
need?
It. Yeah. You know, I think that's super, obviously it's super important. Like you got to know how to cook and clean and like do your laundry and like run a budget and these things. And I think where we lost, and I think this is why, like, and maybe every 80 years, and you could, I've read books on this where it's like every 80 years, we all kind of lose our mind for a minute and then like kind of come back, you know, if you like, you know, to have evidence of that 80 years ago was like World War II. And then 80 years before that was the American Revolution. And
I've never heard the 80 year theory. This is,
it's quite fascinating.
Is this Jungian collective craziness that we all kind of.
Yeah, it kind of creates like this sense of like tribalism in a way, but like not in a healthy way, which is kind of funny. There's a book called Pendulum I would recommend. It's actually very interesting and insightful, because if you track back, just keep going every 80 years, you're going to get to like all the major wars every 80 years. And you're like, oh, that's really interesting. And so a lot of things shift every 80 years. So I think what's happening right now is that we're at this precipice, right? Like, the 80 year mark is in 2023. And so we're even still building up to that intense energy of the collective consciousness of people just losing their minds. And why this one's really important is because like, we're not using guns and bullets anymore. We're using ideas and words. And even this conversation, I think is really important, because people can stop and just think, well, what is true for me? What is my reality? And when you keep asking those questions, what lends itself to is individualism, if we're going to go back to that. But I think, as Westerners, why we have such a craziness right now is because we are training our youth, like you're mentioning, you trained your son like how to cook and clean, like do the intangibles. But I think we don't have tribes of people. And when I say people, I mean men teaching young men psychologically what it means to be a man. So like physically, like, yeah, like here, do these things. This is what a human does. But I think psychologically, we have to really break it down for young men, especially. It's like, testosterone is real, man. it's fire, dude. It's fire.
Let me show you how to control that nuclear furnace.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, and I tell my kids, they came through unusual circumstances because I grew up in Kentucky. My parents both had high school educations, intelligent people. They're not educated people. And I was the first person to go to college. And their mom is, a psychotherapist with a master's degree, two master's degrees. And I have a PhD in rhetoric. And I'm like, you have not come through a normal situation. Like for me, from my side, you've been 20-year experiments.
Yep.
I consciously raised you with rhetorical principles to turn you, make you rhetoric friendly, because that's who I wanted to live around. I like intellectuals. I like people who enjoy messaging and working things out with words. And skills they can learn. But I did all that on purpose.
Yeah.
From day zero with you two.
Yeah.
But who gets that? I mean, who gets raised like that? Almost nobody.
Literally nobody, unless you have a father who is a PhD in rhetoric. That's Zeke and Quincy did. Let's go back. I'm going to ask you a question. You were talking about what is ethical, like I want to say ethical manipulation, because like those two, it's sort of like oxymoron. But what is ethical? Like, you're raising your kids in this sense of like, I want to mold you this way. And of course it's like, like your kids are great humans. They're like amazing, like kids. Like your daughter brought me cookies like every time she came over to work out, which is so funny. I was like, just work out. Stop bringing me cookies because they're so delicious. And I would eat all the cookies.
Yeah. I had good clay to work with. They're both really good kids. Good people.
Yeah. Amazing kids. Amazing kids. So what is ethical manipulation? How does one do so ethically versus like a pharmaceutical company that's, could claim ethics. They could claim it, but
there are ethical Occam razors. There's definitely ways to judge ethical versus unethical. And that's one of the things I'm working on in my class. Like I have a class about converting conservatives, and there's a branch of that about sort of laying out the branch of that is beating conservatives. Like how do you stop unethical persuaders? Like converting them is one thing, but you're converting the herd that they've gotten to, and I can show you how to rescue people out of that herd.
Yeah.
To stop the leaders of that herd, the cowboys who are rustling all the cattle, you have to be able to beat them back, because they're using techniques that are incredibly unethical from a rhetorical public discourse perspective, but they're incredibly effective right now in a social media environment that has instant distribution, very low cost of production, all that stuff that's just changed the whole game. So you have this kind of wrestler's paradise for unethical persuaders. Mm. So one of the things that you can use, like with my example of raising my kids, they lost the ability to choose in that system.
Yep.
And that is absolutely an unethical thing. Taking people's choice away from them. The fact that people get to choose is always part of an ethical system.
Yes.
But they were kids and they couldn't choose yet. So, but I totally like the way you replace that and stay ethical is with transparency. So I told them from as soon as they could, start to understand the words, like I am creating you.
I am the puppet master.
I'm going to talk to you in certain ways and not in others. Like I don't do pejoratives. Like I had rules in the family and they'll still tell you what these rules are. Like there's no negative language in my house between family members.
Okay.
So there's no teasing. There's no criticism. If there's something that you don't like, I'll show you how to present it to get a change.
Yeah.
But don't do it negatively because I don't want that imported into my family.
Right. Yeah.
but I was very transparent about it. Very open.
Yeah.
But I'm actually structuring you too.
I was going to say, I like that. That's a really good rule of when you're in a community, especially people living together in a closed environment. Like, I don't want others, you know,
horrible.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like online, like you need the same kind of rule structures for your social media. Like I have a no negativity policy in social media.
Yeah.
I accept no negative responses. You can praise me all you want, but I don't care if you don't like the jokes. I don't care if you think I said something horrible. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Cause it makes it an unpleasant ecology, and I want pleasant people in my ecology.
I actually do agree with that a lot. I think let me ask you, what other rules did you have in your family growing up for your kids?
Well, one of the rules, they still laugh about this, is if you ever do say something that's critical of somebody else, you know, that you don't like that they've done, or they, you know, something about them, you have to follow it with, "But I like it."
Okay.
So, Quincy, you keep taking the last cupcake, but I like it. You have to cover it with some type of positivity so that the communication stays positive. It's okay to have these feelings and these judgments, but it's not okay to communicate negatively.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. And I think what is important, if I'm going to put this in sort of a box, right? Like, you created a set of bylaws, essentially a set of commandments, if we want to call it that. Don't covet your neighbor and like it, right? But I like it.
Unless she's really hot. Do not covet thy neighbor's wife unless she's really hot.
Unless she's really, if they would just tag, really smoking.
They would tag the Ten Commandments with a nice little, you know,
hashtag.
Yeah, here's a little amendment.
Asterisk. I think what's actually really kind of cool about this is, and I think we do it as humans, as men, because like you and I are both men, we are fathers as well, and I think this is kind of the basis of it, because my sister, as an example, very free range parenting, and everybody else in our family knows that when her kids are around, it's going to be chaos. It's going to be like running around, all these things. And I think what is important about this is, like, you have to have structure, especially as young, like, you know, just people, right? Like, you know, from 0 to 4, you have no rational thought at all. You know, I cut my son's sandwich wrong one day and it was absolute lose his mind. You cut my sandwich wrong, you know, and then it's like, all right, you know, no rational centers at all. So, you know, I think you're right. You know, you gotta develop those young adults, or those young people, into adults. And then I think, you know, as I'm going back to kind of my main point of sort of individualism and sort of psychological development, I think our country, our world needs, like, you know, age 18 and beyond, I think they still need more development. Like, your brain literally isn't developed until the age of 25, fully formed biologically. And so, you know, these ideas can still, you know, infuse our brain, and then we can start canceling each other out. And that's what's going on.
Is that a little slippery, though, for somebody who values individualism and, you know, wants to give people the power to define themselves? Is that a little slippery to add in, like, patriarchal, you know, elders who really, you know, want to instruct those underneath them that are coming up,
like, yeah,
shaping them?
Yeah, no, I think you're right in asking the question. Is it slippery to have these patriarchal individuals, right? Like elders, to sort of dictate said, you know, agenda of an individual. And I'm going to answer this with sort of like a two-part. In the short, no. But in the long, I think what is happening in what is going on right now is that we are going from patriarchal, because there's no doubt we were patriarchal, like, and it stems back to the philosophy of the Bible, of that story of Adam and Eve, where the woman, the female serves the male, right? You remember that part of the story, right? In Western culture?
I remember. Okay. I remember lots about that story. I taught that story at an all female college, Presbyterian college in the South, and mentioned it as an origin myth. And they lost their minds, me calling this a myth.
So I love that you called it a myth, because it is literally mythologic, which then if you break that down, it is just purely how the psyche, how the psyche of human consciousness is developed.
Sure.
So masculine is the prefrontal cortex, is the one of conscious thought. The feminine, that from which all things come, the womb of all things, is by energetic standards, or just, you know, if we're going to break it down, is feminine. And so if we I'm laughing because it's like, if we find out that this isn't history, oh my God, this is what? This is mythology? Oh my God.
Oh my Lord, I got caught. Yeah, I literally, somebody, one of the girls was like, well, what do you believe in? Evolution? I've never heard anybody lean on a word with that much ugliness. Like
the evolution, just intense disdain for the biota.
Not whether I believe evolution or not. It's a scientific theory with a certain amount of evidence behind it. And if you are scientific, you have to accept it. There's no choice.
Okay, perfect. I love this. I totally forgot where we're going because I was really enjoying this conversation.
Well, you're on individualism and you know, the elders instructing patriarchy, and
okay,
you got into genderism.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Is it okay? Yeah, exactly. Okay, so it's not inherently patriarchal to take a young man and develop him into being a better human. There's zero patriarchy about that. I think where the patriarchy comes in is in the philosophic undercurrent of the entirety of civilization, which goes back 2, 3, 4, 5,000 years of this story where we just described, okay, the female serves the male. Well, that's not what it's talking about. This is psychological mythology where we are understanding our own consciousness as an individual. And so when you realize, oh, it has something to do with a man and a woman in a household, or a man and a wife, because those two have the exact same structures in their biology and psyche. So now, now we're starting to realize, oh yeah, man and woman are equal, and you need man and woman in a nuclear, because I think the nuclear family is a good thing. That's up for debate right now. That's a whole other conversation.
I think there's a reason they call it nuclear. It's they get your biggest explosions.
Yeah, right. It's like, it's right. Well, I think a family unit is
pack
a good
everybody
thing.
In. Like, you've got three little kids right now. Like
three.
Under five, under six.
So yeah, 7, 4, and 5 months. We had a pandemic baby. It was, we were like, what else are we gonna do? Let's have a baby on top of all this.
You like that thing that where you stuff everything, you know, down into the springs and everything into the box. And if somebody comes in and opens it, like opens your front door, it's like, bang, it's like, oh my God, look at everything going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think personal development perspective, like this has been the best year of personal development for myself because I got nowhere else to go. I'm forced to sit, you know, in my own shit.
Very interesting for that stuff, right? Like Americans have not had the choice to distract themselves and therapize themselves with shopping and travel and all this stuff. We've had to be like, hey, here we are.
Look at this. Like, hey, like, look at what you created, eat the lunch you packed. And so, yeah, I've done that over the year. And it's also the reason I'm going to make a prediction, whether my prediction, I'm not one to predict, much like, you know, the pundits on like ESPN or something like that. But I really think that we're going to still see for the next couple of years, people just kind of losing their marbles and like kind of going nuts for, you know, just like, cause they haven't done the work necessary. The pressures are getting tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And unless they release the pressure psychologically, they're just going to implode. And then that's going to turn into an explosion. And actually why that's you know, why that's, you know, kind of going back to your original question of like, hey, is it inherently patriarchal? It's like, no, not actually, not at all. I think it's healthy to train men to be good men so that they don't implode and then through physical manipulation explode into a child, explode into a woman, explode into another man. And that could be in the form of emotional explosion or verbal explosion, or obviously physical explosion in that sense. And I think that's the solution.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, partly the fact that, again, when you look at some of the sort of foundational explanations for behavior, people are like, why is it always white guys that are shooting up places? And like, well, you know, white guys are taught that physicality is an option. Like,
right.
Females don't use a lot of physical violence because it doesn't work out that well for them.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
It's like if you were living, I sometimes try to explain it to people for men because they don't get it at all. I'm like,
right.
Just imagine you were living on a planet and there was an equal number of gorillas on the planet and they live in the cities and everything else with you. And at any moment, they could just sideswipe you without even thinking about it and kill you because they're that much stronger than you.
Right.
You know, or, you know, do anything they want to you at any time and you can't protect yourself. You know, that's the world. Like when you look at the difference between female experience in the world and male experience in the world, it's just incredibly different just on the physical level. You know,
yes.
And I was always, you know, always hung around a bunch of, I played sports and like really big guys. Like my best friend was 6'7", you know, like,
oh, yeah,
75 in high school. And, but I was always muscular and I always worked out and everything. I never felt any intimidation until like they got to the point where they were so big. Like I tried to wrestle my friend Kenny once and I'm like, he's throwing me around like a rag doll and I could outbench him. It didn't make any difference. And I'm
right.
Like, oh, this is what it feels like to be powerless,
yeah,
physically powerless. And I'm like, wow,
yes,
that's yes, intense.
Yeah. Yeah. I you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, regardless of if you're male or female, we're all trying to manipulate, right? Like we're all trying to vie and we're all trying to get our way. Like
that's,
in a
that's
way.
Rhetoric. We're all trying to persuade each other.
Yeah, yeah, we're all trying to persuade each other. I mean, that's the, at the end of the day, we're all trying to
you
do
have
that.
To. It is one of the foundational things you have to have on the planet. It's not just humans. Everything has to deal with everything else in their ecology that is
yes,
either trying to eat them, trying
yep,
to take their space, trying to eat their
yep,
food.
Yep.
You know, you have to, it's a dialogue, it's a multiplicity planet. And we
yes,
are now having a relationship with a virus.
Yes.
Nothing to do with us other than to use us as food, you know, as a place to
it,
replicate. And we're
exactly,
like, how dare you?
Yes.
We do that to everything.
Yes.
Everything on the planet. We kill everything that might annoy us.
That is 100% correct.
And the virus is like, you know, I think I can play this game too.
I think this, like I said, the virus has actually been a good thing for a lot of people. You know, there's no doubt it's been a bad, quote unquote, bad thing. But I think there's so much good that has come through because we're forced to sit in our own shit and be like, all right, what have I been doing all this time? Like, what are my values? What do I care about? Oh, like I have these little humans that I'm surrounded by. Can I stop thinking of them as like this little annoyance that, you know, is always yelling and screaming and then seeing like this is a really kind of funny story. We got this new game called Speak Out. And it's like where you put that dental, like plastic thing where it pulls your lips out and you can only see teeth and you have to try to enunciate like this phrase. And it's hilarious. And my son, he's a 4-year-old and he's always trying to like play it and he's like walking around with this thing in his mouth and he's like like trying to tell me you know, trying to say something and trying to get me to guess what he's saying. And I found myself actually yesterday, because I was at home with the kiddos, I found myself like getting annoyed for a second because I was also trying to do laundry, trying to do yeah, dishes. I had a 5-month-old that I'm trying to feed and put down. Like I'm dad, right? I'm like full on dad mode. And I have this like little 5-4-year-old that's like, say, guess what I'm saying? And I'm like,
buddy, take that out of your mind. Like, and I caught myself and I'm like, man, like, he's just trying to have fun. He's just like, just trying to be, you know, like, he's just trying to. And so what, you know, the reason I bring that up is because I, you know, if I hadn't actually, you know, done some psychological work, right, as a man, as a father, you know, there is that inherent nature, right? It's like fire. It's like talking about nuclear, right? There's this inherent fire within, I think, all men that we can just explode, and I could just pick him up and just toss this little human and be like, get out of my face. You know, like, that's obviously not what you want to do. You want to recognize. And so you turn that fire inward and, you know, you look at yourself. And so, you know, it's good.
Yeah, you know, when you bring up individualism, and I've got a couple of friends of mine who do the podcast, and another guy's very much an individualist, like an Ayn Rand. She needs to be just called And, you know, that Ayn thing bothers me. Ayn Rand. You know, he wants to throw some of that at me and all this stuff. And I'm like, it's fine to look at the world in sort of, you know, these iconographies, these small iconographies of a self, right? That's an individual. And when you go into some of the, you know, really, there's so much great theory about identity and individualism versus, you know, dyads and versus groups and communities. Like, people study this stuff like deeply.
Yeah.
And one of the things I always really loved was the phenomenology, the phenomenological approach to cultural studies and ethnography, where you go into a culture and the ultimate success in studying that culture is to be able to authentically access their phenomenology of experience. And so like, your son running around at 4 has a very intense phenomenology, and 4-year-olds do. And you watch your kids go through phenomenological stages of experience. Yep. And at 4, your entire world is driven by, how can I have the most fun at this moment with this stuff?
True.
And that you want everybody else in your phenomenology, and it doesn't matter. It's one of those things that it's really a hard clash. I remember learning this with my daughter. She loved mud and, you know, getting dirty and everything. And I, you know, always bugged me, but then I realized, okay, that's what she's into. I'm going to access that phenomenology at her level and try to experience it the way she's experienced it. So we got in the mud, man. And I'm like,
yes,
mud's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's squishy. It moves. You can mold it.
But you got to let your world go, which is super hard. And you can't just intellectualize your way back there. You've got to get physical. You've got to get the emotions. You got to connect. And it's magic when you can do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think psychologically, right, you as an as the individual, right, as the father figure, had to step outside of your own world. And you can't do that unless you're willing to like let go of the identity of you, of like that, which is Dan French, right? This idea. And well,
that's
if you can
the
step
problem with individualism, right? Like, it's a false concept. We Correct. Are not individuals. We are collective of all these different things that are strong and persistent over time, but it's a partialism. It's kind of a tapestry, you know, of things that feel familiar to us, but it's not like there's a single isolated unit that is you.
Yeah. So that a perfect example is like, you know, I think individualism fails just as fast as communism fails in a way, right? Kind of what, from what your perspective is, it's we have to work with each other, right? If I don't, and just even from a family perspective, if my wife and I don't work together, then like, it's very difficult to do all the things in the same way. If we as a community in the city of Austin don't work together, okay, now things, you know, again, kind of get further. And yet it's, again, it's just my personal philosophy. I think it's through the individual. I think it's like through healthy, it's like having healthy cells, right? I think you have to have like healthy cells in order to have a healthy biota and a healthy individual. And you have to just really focus on, like, you know, each and every cell has to do its job. And if it's not doing its job, then the innate intelligence of your body will just
destroy you and slough you off, right? Imagine if that existed in society.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of does, but it's like, but again, with the idea of like the solitary individual versus a fragmented individual, you know, the partialism of individuality. Like there may be 150 things that run through your life pretty consistently all the time, simultaneously. And if one of them slips out of whack, you're like, oh, I got to fix that one. You know, like yesterday, so I cracked a tooth like 10 years ago on a kernel of popcorn, a back molar. And I've had dentists ever since saying, you know, you should, you know, pull that out or something. I'm like, I don't have problems with it because I take care of it. And so, but yesterday, like I had all this whole day, all this stuff going on. And then like, I bit into something, I could feel that tooth. And I'm like, you little son of a bitch, you've been around for 10 years. Just every, you know, 6 months, 9 months, 18 months, you'll be like, hey, remember me? Remember I'm back here. You're going to deal with me on my schedule. And that's part of me. Like if you take yourself like as an individual and you break it down into its pico level information, you
know,
the top of your head and go all the way to the bottom of your toes. And you'll be able to list all the things that you've got to deal with up and down your body. You're aware of them. They may flare up. They may, and it's an incredible amount of information that we have about the individual, but you don't think of yourself as a collection of body areas.
Right.
You think of yourself as a body.
Yeah, it's just like
you as a chiropractor, you break people into parts.
It's you break it down into parts, but then you recognize that the whole system functions as one as well. So it is inherently individualist and yet holistic, if we want to use that word.
Exactly, right? You are, as an individual, you're a collective.
Yes. But the experience of a liver cell is the experience of a liver cell, and the experience of a kidney cell is the experience of a kidney cell. Just as Dan is his own individual experience, because I don't have the same life that you are living. Like I'm not in your mind and body. I'm not, you know, living in that life, and I am in my own. And so our own point of consciousness, that which we are, right? Like we're all sort of like these individuals walking around. And so nothing outside of me will ever make me happy. That's what my own, like, if we're going back to stoicism, right?
Really? Have you ever tried a good buttered biscuit?
I mean, it's so good, dude. I had a good piece of chocolate yesterday. I know the biscuit happiness, but continue to eat those biscuits and then see what happens. Are you fulfilled, right? Are you happy if you continue to eat those good buttered biscuits?
When I eat that biscuit, during that biscuit experience, I'm pretty happy.
It's the biscuits, man. You know, as you continue to eat the biscuits, then you get out of shape and you become unconditioned, and then you look in the mirror and you find there's an unease or an unhappiness.
That's just because God is unfair.
If God is
fair, I'd be able to eat as many biscuits as I want.
I think the system of God, if we're going to use the word God, that's a heavy word. I think it's a good word though, or just like the source of all consciousness. Because I've really gone deep on this. I'll be honest. We could have a whole.
All right. Well, let's not go over there yet. Let's stay on individualism because we're coming up on an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time I talk to, like, this is why I pick people like you. There's so much to talk about. It's always like, oh, let's do that again. You know, there's other stuff to cover. So.
There's so much to unpack here.
Yeah. So individualism, I think. Here, say hello to Quincy. She's calling from France. Hey, look who's on the.
Oh.
Look who's on my podcast.
Hey, Quince.
We're doing a podcast, Quince.
I love it. Right,
where is he?
I know.
He misses your cookies.
I want more cookies.
I know. I don't have an oven here, so I can't bake anything.
Air fryer. They're small. They're tiny. You know, you could put it, air fry them.
There you go, Quince. Air fryer. All right. Well, thanks for saying hello from France. I'm going to finish my podcast with Dave, and I'll call you back.
Bye, Quincy. That's awesome. So going back to individualism, this is how to you and I are solving all the world's problems right now. I don't know if you know this.
I do that very well from this chair.
That's it's a perfect place to solve the world's problems. Two bald men, Dr. Dan and Dr. Dave here, solving all the world's problems. I genuinely do think that through individualism, we can reduce our suffering and as such find internal states of being that are better than what is current. And therefore things can get better through the individual. I don't think a handout or a buttered biscuit is the way, though. I'm not saying get rid of socialized programs. I'm not saying that. I am saying, because this is where the fault of the, right? It's like, if you're conservative, then you're like, oh, you are a heartless asshole. And if you're a Democrat, then it's like, you are a communist, right? You know, like a bleeding heart,
yeah, Democrat. We, you know, it's what's it called? Kabuki theater at that point. It's a puppet show. It's like big, broad, you know, Punch and Judy. It's, you know, it's
big, broad strokes. I think this is like kind of where my stance is. And the reason I started the Unbreakable Self, which is,
are you going to take away my biscuits? Is that what you're going to get to? You're going to,
like, I'm not taking away your biscuits. I'm not taking away your biscuits, bro. I'm going to give you, have more biscuits. I genuinely think we can find happiness within our own self. Our state of well-being can be raised through internal rhetoric, dialogue, and we can become, we can't always change our circumstances, but we can change the way we view our circumstances. And at the fundamental level, I think that is where we need to, you know, that's like where the battle, quote unquote, battle is. If there is a battle, I don't even like to use that word term. That's where the work is. And then you become a better human. You just wave at a person and be like, hey, neighbor, you know, like just in a genuine way, you know, instead of saying like, oh, that asshole has one of those QAnon flags, you know, like, oh, that guy.
Yeah. It's fascinating, you know, watching all this stuff play out in public. Again, lots of stuff to talk about. Like I always come down on theory about self and community, and when you go down into the sub theory and start trying to figure out, you know, things like you obviously process a lot, you know, but I always come back to, I have a three word kind of covering law for every piece of theory, no matter whether I like it or not like it, but it's always that's useful, but problematic.
Yeah.
You know, and individualism is a amazing theory. It's a great orientation. It gives you a strong telos to follow in your life, you know, and very clear patterns about where you're going off the path and how to try to stay on the path. So it's a beautiful piece of, you know, theory. It just gets problematic when it, like you said, it grows outside of maybe the individual and you start to trying to do social theory and government policy with it.
Right.
Which is what Reagan did. He came in and just basically used the rhetoric of individualism to kill off social programs.
Yeah.
And so it becomes a powerful thing. And like I said, at the very beginning of this, it resonates very well with Americans. I think it resonates very well with men, you know, about being individuals, and it has a lot of value, but it's always, let's capture the value, but man, you need to stay aware of the problems because they are there too.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the, like, why is it so popular with men? Right. Like, and it's not because we can, you know, beat down everybody else and work harder and win at this game called modernity, if we're going to talk about that. But I think at the fundamental level of man, we know that we are inherently dangerous. And I think that we don't claim that, but we know it. Like, there's this level of like kind of the gorilla, like we're all the gorilla, you know, and we know we're dangerous, but we know we also love our family. We love our community. We want to be good. We want to be valuable, effective. And we know we have, it's like fire. That's the best way to describe it, is that we have fire and we can either burn ourselves up in our world around us, or we can turn that into a unit that cooks food and heats the home. You know, it's like, we are that fire. And so it's like, we have to be individualistic as men. And I think it's just part of our nature. I think the masculine psyche lends itself to individualism. It's also why, like on the shadow end of it, there's that lone ranger, that lone wolf perspective. It's, you know, either way, it's individualistic, right? I can do it myself. I'll do it. You know, don't worry. Don't fuss about me. You know, and then you die of a heart attack at 55.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're like, I'm fine, you know.
Well, you remember what happened to Prometheus when he decided to, you know, play around with fire. You can also right. end up chained to a mountain with, you know, a vulture eating your liver. Fire can go in so many ways.
Absolutely. So I mean, Icarus the same way. You know, it's like you can get too close to the sun and your wax wings burn up. So either way, heat will do something, you know.
That'd be a great way to go though, man. I want to do that. I want to fly at the sun.
Yes.
And have my until and I'd be like feeling my wax wings, you know, melting, like I don't care. What a great yes. way to go. And then just yes. fall into the ocean, which with everybody going, what was that?
Yeah. What was that guy?
That was a good way to die right there. Melted wings near the sun, fall into the ocean. You're done. Perfect.
I love it.
Well, this was fun, man. I'm going to let you go because I need to call Quincy back. And I really appreciate you talking for an hour.
Yeah, man, that was great. And, you know, happy to lend my two cents on how to save the world.
You know, but I love the fact that there's so many satellite people out here in the world doing their thinking and doing their work. And, you know, we don't really get enough interaction with each other to see the value that everybody is bringing to their life. You know,
like
in this, I'm looking at my back window and I can see four houses from right here. And who knows what, you know, horror shows are in there or what, just amazing human beings are in there.
Right.
You never get
right.
to see it. So
I know.
Like, this is cool, I think.
Unless you live across the street from me, which you don't anymore. So that's
the only horror show I saw from you was when your dog that had more batteries in it than I've ever seen in a species ever would just come charging up the front door so happy and like, I'm out.
She's a love pup, man. She loves getting out. Yeah
she's
so
great.
Yeah.
Well, this was cool, man. We'll circle back around. I appreciate it a lot. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah. So if they want to be their best self and be their best individual self, they can check out unbreakableself.com. And that is designed for men. And I don't shy away from that. We can have another conversation on why that is. But that's for men to claim their greatness and be the best self they can be.
Damn, I want to claim my greatness. Where to go?
Where to go?
It snuck out the dog door, I think.
There's a formula. There's a formula.
This has been Rhetoric Warriors Podcast. Hey, stop by, take a class from us, learn some things, actually get out there and affect human beings. It's more fun than it sounds like sometimes.
Do it.
All right. See you.
All right. We'll see you, bud.